Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, y'all. Oh, yeah. It's Empowerment Hour, 365 Days of Motivation and Personal Empowerment. Just for you, it's your main man, Marvin Rowe, and a crew. Oh, yeah. Come see you live. Empowerment Saturday. We got Dr. Bruce and our Recapture the African Mind series. Come on, y'all, join me. Call a friend. Let's get this thing going. Come on. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's better love. But I got. Yeah. Better love. Better love. All right, all right. There is no better love than for self and kind. No better love. Welcome to the Empowerment Hour. We're recapturing the African mind. With the Recapturing the African Mind series with Dr. Bruce. You got something to look forward to. So when I ask you to call a friend, right, call a relative, somebody African-American, somebody of color, 845-277-9250 to get started, right? Got a great lecture coming up. Dr. Bruce is on standby. And we just want to give it to our people, right? Again, who needs it the most? When you look around the world, and look at what we've been through, you got to know we need healing. We need to address some issues. And that's what the NAAEA wants to do. It's the National African American Empowerment Association. And the mission of the National African American Empowerment Association, the NAAEA, is to ensure that the needs of the African American community is met. Right? Why not? Somebody should do it. Somebody should be looking out for us. We should be our brothers and sisters keepers, right? What we want to do is provide programs, services, activities, lectures, workshops, trainings, and institution that support our people, institution that define our own reality, institutions that inspire our people, institutions that motivate, empower our people. That's what we want. We want to inspire our members to be better than they ever were, right? And as we look through the society that we live in and all the things that we've been through, we need that from us. It's FUBU, by us, for us. We're doing it for ourselves now. We're looking at working on ourselves to become the best that we can be. And we want to use the peace model to do it. So you're probably asking again, Brother Marvin, what's the peace model? Let me tell you, five critical areas that we need to work in if we're going to stay and live in this country or any economy, right? Politics. You have to have a political agenda, right? Understanding the political agenda and activities in your area, but also local, state, national, and international politics is what we need to be working on and have a clear understanding of the economic system and economics, how to manage money. And how those systems are so important to our functioning, to the next generation. And we need an economic agenda. Dr. Claude Anderson has it so right. And one day we're going to get him on the show too. It's the A now, athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. We lead the league, the human race, in health disparities. Some of it has to do with genetics. Some have to do with stress. And some have to do with the environment that we live in. Some have to do with the activities that we continue to produce in our lives. But either way, we need to take care of ourselves now. We're going to have a health and wellness agenda that really looks at taking care of our physical, mental, and emotional health. We could do it. You're going to have to push back from the table. You're going to have a fitness regimen, right? You're going to have to get out there, walk, run, do some sit-ups, push-ups, whatever you need to do. But you're going to have a fitness routine. I'm telling you, we need it. Take care of yourself so you can be around for the next generation. And that is culture. It's a C. That's the relevant cultural programs, just like this one, to educate, motivate, inspire, and empower our young people and ourselves. We got to do it. Nobody else can do it. We're going to have to do it for ourselves. And so we're going to have to do that work of working on ourselves. And lastly is education. It's the E. Right? A comprehensive education that really looks at what we need to do across the board to get better, to build stronger communities, stronger families, right? Stronger relationships among men and women of color, and that we can have strong, positive, peaceful, productive families and communities. Who's going to do that? We have to do it for ourselves. It's no more looking around trying to ask other people to do something that we need to do for ourselves. We're going to have to do that. We're going to have to unite. We're going to have to develop a collective consciousness, and we're going to have to understand who we've been in order to find out who we are. And now, our Stan Macklin moment. Brother Stan.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Well, I think we fail to see how good and precious life can be. We operate so much in doom and gloom and negativity.
Uh-huh.
Causes us to tune out the big picture. When we're able to see how good and precious that life can be, it gives you a willingness to strive into the future. It gives you the foundational tenets to lay down for the next generation to build into their future.
So true.
But if we're always walking in doom and gloom and negativity and trying to get in to fit into somebody else's reality, that's not it. No, no, no. We are unique. Just like there's nobody on the face of this earth that has fingerprints like you, because you are unique. And when we have that unified consciousness, man, the sky's not even the limit for us. It's not. The brother said it right. We can literally create our state of heaven, and we have to walk in that. It says, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So we need to strive to see and even pray how good and precious life can be. And that gives you the opportunity to literally perpetuate happiness and joy and peace and prosperity, because things are being sustained in a sustainable way. So we got work.
That's so true.
But we must unify. And let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are. Original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
That's my dedication to my brother Stan, who's my co-host for many years. So, Stan, we thank you for your commitment and your work. No, you're not with us here physically, but you are with us in spirit. So we thank you for that. And now, it's our Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Brother George, you know I got to do this right. Oh, yeah. Come on.
Bring it. What?
We right here. Y'all know how
this goes. We right here.
We ain't going nowhere. Brother George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate it. Hopefully, the show will be exciting and smooth as we plan. Now, today, I want to use Kujichagulia as our Kwanzaa principle for the day. Self-determination.
Right.
To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. I think that's really, really critical in the times that we're living in today. In our educational system, especially with our kids, in the educational system, that we need to adhere to that principle. Now, with Full Event, instead of reading directly from a book that I have, I would like to speak on a brother who was a great orator and an abolitionist, Frederick Douglass. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to mention some of his quotes, because I was always so impressed by his quotes when I was coming up. I remember Dr. Bridges did one of his quotes, and I mean, it was it just stuck with me. And I think he re-mentioned it last week or the week before, or the week, the times that he was here. Now, the first one is, find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have the exact measure of the injustice and wrong which will be imposed on them. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have the exact measure of the injustice and wrong which will be imposed on them.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is, people might not get all they work for in this world, but they must certainly work for all they get. It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men and women.
I like that.
Some value of education by having it. I know its value by not having it. A man is worked upon by what he works on. He may carve out his circumstances, but his circumstances will carve him out as well. Once you learn to read, you will be forever free. To suppress free speech is a double wrong. It violates the rights of the hearer as well as those of the speaker. Now, today, I want to introduce the next speaker that we're going to have, which is next weekend. And the brother's name is Fahim Knight. Fahim Knight is doing a work that will soon be on the bookshelves. And the work that he's going to talk about next week, he calls it somewhat of a continuation to Miseducation of the Negro. And he's going to have chapters on the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, Dr. Ben Yohanan, Dr. Clark, Dr. Jackson. He's going to have a chapter on Dr. Bridges. You know, so it's going to be a really interesting conversation next week. So I would like for you to tell your friends and family so that they could tune in and listen to this brother, you know, talk about his new book and what's in it. Now, at this time, we want to bring Dr. Bridges on so that he can continue his series on Recapturing the African Mind series. And he's going to be going into not quite the next chapter. I think he'll still be on chapter 2. But he can tell you where he's going to move to from this point. So, Dr. Bridges, are you on the line?
I am.
Yes, sir.
All right, Bruce, welcome to the show. Hey, Brother George, I got to do it this week.
Yep.
Dr. Bruce, I got to bring you in right. I got to do it. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Come on. Come on in, brother. You got to bring it today.
Bring it.
You got to bring it, Dr. Dr. Bruce. They right here waiting for you. And we ain't going nowhere. We right here. All right. Dr. Bruce, I had to do it. Welcome to the show. How are you, brother?
Oh, I'm okay, my brother. Good to be here with you again this week.
All right. What you got for us this week?
All right. First thing, I'd like to make sure that some of our listeners may have a pencil or paper or something to write with. And also, if you have a map, would be real good.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
A map of the world, it would be good, because we're doing these sessions on the African-American Empowerment program here every Saturday at 2 o'clock, and I'm on every other Saturday, but really listen to this program every Saturday. Then you won't have to guess whether or not I'm going to be on. But it's on every Saturday at 2 o'clock, and I want you to get a map, and we're conducting it like a classroom. We're conducting it unlike the big stereophonic, quadraphonic radio stations that are commercial that have music and a lot of foolishness and those kinds of things. We're going to use the airwaves to educate our people, use the master's technology, and use what it is that we have that we can use to educate ourselves. So get a pencil and a paper, and we're going to move on. Now, today we're going to start on page 62 in my book, Recapturing the African Mind. That's where we'll be starting. But before we get started into that, and then we're going to take questions at the end of class. So if you have any questions, just hold them to the end of, write them down, jot them down so you won't forget, and hold them to the end of class. You'll get a chance to answer, to ask any questions that you might have. And I especially want to hear from new people, new callers. I've been telling people all the week about this program. And I met a sister just yesterday in Durham who's a high school biology teacher at a local high school here in Durham, North Carolina, Hillside High. Hope she's tuned in today. And some other people I told about the program on this week, and I hope that they'll tune in also. And I want to mention that Dr. Rogers' program this past Tuesday was an excellent program. The Black Reality Think Tank, which is a program that you also should start to listen to, and at the end we'll advertise that program and how you can tune into that. But it was an excellent program dedicated to black women. So it was an excellent program, Dr. Rogers. And be sure next week to listen to Brother Fahim. But now what we want to talk about today, first of all, someone said to me, just give a general geographical perspective of the continent of Africa. And I want to do that first. That's why I wanted y'all to have a map, pencil, paper, so that you can take some things down. Now, first of all, before we talk about Africa itself, the whole world was a part of a geographic theory called Pangea, and that's spelled P-A-N-G-E-A, Pangea, just like it sounds, Pangea. And pan is a prefix of a word that means all. When we were in school, the Panhellenic Council was a council of all the Greek organizations, pan meaning all Hellas, all Greek, Panhellenic. This is Pangea, all geography, pan-geography, or pan-earth. So this whole theory of Pangea was a theory that states that at one time the earth was one gigantic landmass, and that all of the continents began to pull away from Africa, which at the time was called the supercontinent. And Africa was called the supercontinent because it moved much less than any of the other continental masses that spread out from it. And Africa, being called the supercontinent, was also called Gondwanaland. And these terms that I'm giving you, you can take them down and you can do further research on them as you go on with your studies. I'm not trying to give you everything, but just give you certain keys to understand what I'm talking about. But Africa was called Gondwanaland, spelled with G-O-N-D. W-A-N-A, land, L-A-N-D, GONDWANALAND, Gondwanaland, as a part of Pangaea. And some European geographers, which we, well, we won't get into that, talk about these concepts. But Africa was a part of what was called the theory of Pangaea, and it pulled, and all the other continents pulled away from Africa. And this is why when you look at the map of the world, and certain puzzle makers and toy companies have even designed maps that are puzzle pieces, and you can put these puzzles together. If you were to look at Africa, you can take, this is why I want those who are tuned in, if you could, to look at a map, you could take South America and push it almost directly to the east across to Africa, and it would fit directly into the west side of Africa. The east side of South America would fit almost directly into the west side of Africa. And then when you look at the east side of Africa, you'll find that the little island of Madagascar off the east, southern east coast of Africa will fit almost directly into Africa. So everything broke away from Africa due to some tectonic activity and some movement and some fissures in the earth, which we won't get to all that right now. Don't worry about that. But just wanted to make it clear that the earth was one at one time, one gigantic landmass with water around it. But then due to some activities within the earth causing rock movement and what they call igneous activity, then the earth began to shift and produce these continents that we have. This is why you find some of the same resources in the western side, the western side of Africa and the eastern side of South America, some of the same types of animal life and plant life you find in various continents because of their proximity in that one Pangaea. But I want to mention that. Now, next thing for the class, I want to also mention that Africa itself, Africa is the second largest continent on the face of this planet, covering about 12 million square miles, so huge and so gigantic that the United States would fit into Africa about 3.5 to 4 times, just to give an idea of how big Africa is. 3.5 to 4 times this country that you are sitting in right now listening to this program, United States, would fit into Africa about 3.5 to 4 times. As a matter of fact, Africa is larger than about 18 countries on this earth combined, larger than India, China, England, Sweden, Germany, Mexico, Peru, New Zealand, all the, in 18 countries, 18 world countries. Africa is larger than all these 18 world countries combined. I'm not naming all of them, but it's larger than that, just to give an idea of how big it is. About 1.2 billion people on the continent of Africa, 1.2 billion people on the continent of Africa. Africa also, we look at the fact that Africa has tremendous water resources with lakes and rivers, which I won't go into all of them now, but it has tremendous animal resources on the continent of Africa. And, of course, the continent of Africa has been made to look small and insignificant. And when you are trying to belittle a people or belittle their homeland or make them small so they can become insignificant in the world today, you make it look like it's a little small place that has nothing going on. And so this is why we never would have thought that Africa has the world's longest river on the face of the earth, which is the Nile River, going about 4,000 miles from Central Africa and emptying out into the Mediterranean Sea. They would never let us know that Africa covers the 12 million square miles, 36 degrees above the equator, and 36 degrees below the equator, that Africa is so large, you see. So because when you start talking about size, you're talking about power. You're talking about strength, you see. You're talking about the ability to move and change things if you have organization. So our European teachers and trainers have always tried to make everything that we are about insignificant. And so this is why we as people have to make our homeland, make our beginnings, make our advent onto the earth and where we were stand out among nations of the earth, as Marcus Garvey used to tell us, you see. But you see, no one has ever told us that. Now, we're going to, that's just a little bit about the geography of Africa, very little bit, just to give an idea. Of course, Africa is bounded, and when we say bounded, we mean the closest land or water mass next to a particular place. That's what boundary means, or bounded. When I say bounded, Africa is bounded on the west by the Atlantic Ocean. Africa is bounded on the east by the Indian Ocean and the Suez Canal up in the northeast and the Red Sea. And Africa is also bounded to the north by the Mediterranean Sea and the continent of Europe, you see, if you want to call Europe a continent. Actually, Europe is not a continent. When you look at it, Europe is really a tail, the tail on the kite of Asia. When you look at Europe and Asia, to those who may have a world map in front of you, and I hope you do, you see Asia is the largest continent on the face of the earth, and then the little small tail on the kite of Asia is Europe. Europeans have created them a continent. Every other continent on the face of the earth is an independently standing landmass surrounded by water, but Europe is the only one that does not. So Europeans have defined everything in the world. They call themselves a continent. They call themselves the originators of civilization. They started time. When people start discussing time, they say that time begins at the prime meridian. The prime meridian, the first prime, meaning first, the first line of longitude that runs down the earth. The prime meridian is where time starts, and that runs through Greenwich, England. So white people have defined everything, and we, as Brother George said earlier, actually, we have to begin to define ourselves and define our own history and step out of the bounds of Eurocentrism and speak for ourselves and do for ourselves. So I want to make those things clear. Now, another thing I'd like to say to those who are listening, and I noticed this from the study of history, that many of you are students of history and try to learn and read. Whenever you're studying history, understand the patterns of history, the patterns, the likenesses, the similarities. Look at the comparisons and contrast different situations, different events, and begin to question and analyze, and then you'll see that we've been lied to about a lot of things, and then we can get it straight. And the reason I mention this is because my book was based upon the patterns that I saw in history of European colonialism. And on page 62 in my book, I'm talking about mine destruction in the country of Burkina Faso. Burkina Faso is a country in West Africa, bordering on, with Ghana and Togo and that area of West Africa. But I'm coming straight from my book now to those who have the book, Mine Destruction in Burkina Faso. In his book of Water and Spirit, that's the title of a book, a writer by the name of Maladoma Somme gives an excellent account of life among the Jesuit priests in his West African country of Burkina Faso. And by the way, that country, Burkina Faso, was named by Thomas Sankara, one of the great leaders of Burkina Faso, who was killed, and it means land of the upright people, Burkina Faso. Prior to being called Burkina, B-U-R-K-I-N-A, B as in baby, U-R-K-I-N-A, Burkina Faso, F-A-S-O. Burkina Faso was called Upper Volta by white people because of its location along the Volta River, the Volta, V-O-L-T-A, the Volta River. But Sankara renamed it, going back again to Kujichagulia. He said, we're going to get rid of this European name, Upper Volta, and we're going to call it Burkina Faso, which means land of the upright people. But in Burkina Faso, I'm back to my book now, the French in West Africa, going again, it's a French colony. The French conquered and colonized Burkina Faso. So that tells you something right there when we understand French colonialism. The French in West Africa, back to my book, embarked upon training an entire generation of Catholic priests and would frequently kidnap young boys from their villages. The Catholic missionaries were known as Père Blanc, or white fathers. Now, when I was talking earlier about the patterns, if those who are tuned in remember, week before last, we talked about how Europeans in the Congo region trained the sons of Nzinga, Mayemba, to become Catholic priests so that they could come back into their country and teach Christianity from the white man's perspective. This is the same thing that was happening in the French country of Burkina Faso. Going back again, like I said, study the patterns. The French in West Africa embarked upon training an entire generation of Catholic priests and would frequently kidnap young boys from their villages. They would go into, this is not the book now, upon arrival at the missions, they would, first of all, they would go into the villages and take little black boys up into their location of where their missions were located in the country of Burkina Faso, and would take these little boys and put them in. Now back to the book, second paragraph on page 62. Upon arrival at the missions, the names of the children would be changed from their given African names to European names. What did we say happened in the Congo a week before last? The names were changed. They're changing the names again. What happened to Kunta Kinte in Roots? His name was changed to Toby. What happened to you and I in this country? Our names were changed, even though now when we studied history, well, that's another story. But anyway, the names were changed. Now, Maladoma Somme, the author of the book that we're talking about, his name was changed to Patrice. And he notes that the names of some of the other boys at the school included such European names as Marcelin, Gatien, Daniel, and the like. Still in the book now. Today, African-American parents think they are naming their children, but the pool of names being drawn from is a pool given to them by Europeans. So they think they're naming us, but they're actually naming us from a pool that's been given by European people. Now, there's nothing being shown here to them reflecting their African culture and heritage. Still in the book now. Third paragraph. On the Mission Hill in Burkina, some saw religious colonialism as a torture to the soul that was enforced by the local population. Even though all the teachers were themselves Africans, listen to this now, listen carefully now, they would not allow their tribal language to be spoken at all. So you go to the Mission Hill to study Eurocentric Christianity, not the real Christianity, because the real Christianity comes from you and me, but you go to study Eurocentric Christianity, and you can't even speak language. Now back to the book. Even though all the teachers were themselves African, they would not allow their tribal language to be spoken at all. Furthermore, only French could be spoken at the school. Here we are again, making our language, our culture, our pronunciation secondary to French, to the colonizers' language. Furthermore, only French could be spoken at the school. Still reading now. The headmaster of the school went so far as to declare it a sin, listen now, to speak the Dagara language. And the Dagara language was the language of the people of Burkina Faso. But it was a sin to speak their own language. Think about it, brothers and sisters, to those who are tuned in this evening to the African American Empowerment Program. It was a sin to speak your own language. Now, eventually, the band, that was a band, B-A-N, that was a ban, we ain't talking about the deodorant either, there was a ban on speaking their native language. And it was unnecessary as the language was forgot. Eventually, we forgot our own languages, brothers and sisters. So our language was banned, and we had to speak French. Eventually, we forgot our language, and we had to speak the colonizers' language. What happened to us in this country? We were banned from learning our history, banned from learning our culture and our heritage. We were banned from learning anything about us, and eventually, we forgot it. Back to the book. The total environment in the life of the African at the mission school was European. Most prominent were the Bible courses and other subjects related to religion. We move on to page 63. The author, Somme, in his book, Of Water and Spirit, discusses two sections of the religious campus on the seminary in Nancy. I put it in parentheses in my book, Seminary. Y'all look those words up. Seminary. What that means, seminary, and what cemetery. Seminary from the word semen, which means life. Cemetery means death. Cemetery. So which is it? Is it a seminary or a cemetery? All right. But anyway, these sections of the school. One was called the Roman campus, and the other was called the Greek campus. Listen to me now. Still reading. Approximately 600 Africans were going to a lecture hall in Africa to hear a lecture by a European priest on a European religious subject. 600 Africans going to a lecture hall to hear a lecture by a European priest on a European religious subject, and that's it. And most likely the life of a European saint. Now listen carefully. Formal birthdays, I'm in the book now, were not respected by the priest. Some students usually bore the name of the saint, at which case the birthday of the saint became the birth date of the African student. So let me make this clear, out of the book for a minute. You take the name of a European saint, you take the birthday of a European saint, and eventually, as I go back to the book here, consequently, like the native language, their birthdays were also eventually forgotten by the children. They forgot their own birthdays because they took the birthday of the European saint. This is a heavy indoctrination that was being put upon us as a people here in West Africa and all over Africa, but I'm just giving examples. Let's go on. History lessons focus on the deeds of the European. Moreover, because values such as power, freedom, and peace were presented in Western terms, the concepts of these virtues for both the continental and diasporan Africans, meaning Africans on this side of the continent, was the same as the European concept. All of our concepts of freedom, peace, material, everything is based upon Europeans. Testimonies in the textbooks were all from European thinkers and inventors. I'm reading again from page 63. For example, the study of the heavens was attributed to Galileo, and Gutenberg was credited with the discovery of the printing press, while Africans were only mentioned in the context of European involvement. The children were taught that whites came to Africa to save black people. Their civilizing efforts were analogized to a mother bird who has to put the baby bird under her protective wing. Even the horrendous commerce of slavery was justified in the mission schools. Now listen to this, and I put this in italics in my book, The Funny Kind of Writing. African history was a subject that was never taught. Never taught African history. All right, as we go on into text, and I'm going to leave it open here and move on because we can have some discussion when we go to our phone lines. The African teachers at the schools were indoctrinated to teach and defend the position of Europeans. Think about it now. Think about your training at your high school, whatever town you're in, whatever city you're in. Think about how your teachers were indoctrinated to teach and defend the position of Europeans. Back to the book. All of these practices combined to inculcate and perpetuate a Eurocentric worldview. Most of us today have a Eurocentric worldview based on what we've been taught, not by white teachers necessarily, but by black teachers who have been trained by our white oppressors. We have a Eurocentric worldview. Now I'm going to the bottom of page 63. To ensure that the Eurocentric mind would be spread by the soon-to-be African priest, Father Superior. Now listen to this. This is another thing. Look at this Catholicism now. The priest is called Father Superior, and the head nun is called Mother Superior. Listen to Father Superior, Mother Superior. They're, again, making our culture, our heritage, our positions in our society, our tribal chiefs, our spiritualists, our people who lead us in religion, they're secondary to Father Superior and Mother Superior. But Father Superior did a speech here that I'm going to let you all, I'm just going to skip on over that for a minute and go down to how else they took our minds at Burkina Faso. Catholic priests, second paragraph on page 64, the priest targeted the village youth for classes in catechism. those who are Catholic and have been around the Catholics know what catechism is, but I want to etymologize that word catechism. I want to break that word down, catechism. And I spell it first, catechism, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-S-M, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-S-M. Catechism, catechism is a word which comes from the Greek word katechēn, which is a compound form of the prefix, and it actually means to den in instruction or to instruct orally, thoroughly, or completely. In other words, if you know about catechism in Catholic schools, you have to repeat what the nun says over and over and over. And so what they're doing is making sure that you get this information into your heads, deep into your conscious and deep into your subconscious, and this is why we catechize you. And then I'm going on further on page 64. According to Webster's Third New World Dictionary, International British Dictionary, the word den means a loud, confused sound. And this is where the word catechism comes from, den, D-I-N, den. And sometimes, however, applying to a loud noise or noises, sometimes painfully, are totally taken over the consciousness. So they were trying to take over our conscious thinking by giving us these catechisms I talk about on page 65 that you all can read on your own. But if you didn't know anything about Catholicism, they always have these catechisms. And then as I begin to end this chapter so that we can take questions and comments and start with the new one on next week, I talk about mind destruction on page 67 in Nigeria and Sierra Leone. And I talk about how the mission schools were placed in those countries also, and it how we were being indoctrinated into religion in Nigeria as well as Sierra Leone. And I wanted to talk about, on this page 67, Edward Blyden. He's a person that you might want to look up, Edward Blyden, Edward B-L-Y-D-E-N, Edward Blyden. He wrote a book, I think it's where Brother Fahim, maybe later on can get it, Christianity, Islam, and the Negro Race. That's what it was. He was a Liberian. But he wrote a book, and he charged the missionaries in Sierra Leone in 1876 with a complete disrespect for African customs, being able to see that Europeans held no regard for the African mind. Blyden stated, and I quote Blyden, that whites see the African mind as blank or worse than blank, filled with everything dark and horrible and repulsive. Missionaries were trying to make Africans into Christian Europeans. Now, Blyden says, if European missionaries wanted Africans to become Christians, so be it. But let them be African Christians. This is what we should be today in America and throughout the world. If we're going to be a Christian, be an African Christian. Be an African nationalist Christian. Be an African Christian. I'm going to repeat Blyden again. If European missionaries wanted Africans to become Christians, so be it. But let them be African Christians. And then Blyden goes on further in a letter to the Christian Mission Society in London. He says that Africans reflect the minds of those in the mission schools. If you will not allow us to think and speak like men on issues of African education and Christianity, why bother to educate us? He said, why are you going to educate us if you're not going to allow us to think and speak on issues regarding Africa, okay? And then in Nigeria and other parts of the continent influenced by missionaries, deceit was not only practiced by the missionaries, it was also practiced by those Africans who became conscious of the hypocritical actions of the missionaries. Upon becoming disillusioned over the duplicity of the missionaries, African students were counseled many times by the elders to suffer in silence to reap the benefits of the harvest. After leaving school, Africans were instructed to live by their own standards. Missionaries established these schools to attract Africans to their Europeanized Christian message. It was believed by the missionaries that those Africans who stepped only to secure Western education would be won over by the strong mental influence. influence of religion. They realized that religion was so strong that if you went to school to study science or mathematics or to study history, you'd be overtaken by religion. Now, so now I want to take this next paragraph. Not only in Nigeria, but also in other parts of the African continent, the primary purpose of the missionaries, listen carefully now, was religious conversion, and schools were considered as only adjuncts, or to add on, to this purpose. So powerful was religion, viewed as a destructive force to the minds of Africans, that in a widely distributed handbook by Catholic missionaries, they were reminded, listen now, this is very heavy here, they were reminded that whoever controlled the schools would own Africa. Missionaries understood, I repeat, that whoever controlled the schools would own Africa. Our schools in this country are and have been controlled by a system that keeps us inferior and not thinking outside of the box by ourselves. And you can own anything if you control the minds of people. And then I talk about how the Bible was taught in Sierra Leone in West Africa, and the teachers were very good at interpreting the various biblical stories and morals to us in imagery, and I go on discussing that. And then we go on into the next chapter, and some of that you can read on your own. I just want to give an idea of how you have to look and study the patterns of history and begin to analyze. And I just want to say one thing, and then I'm going to end this up and let us maybe take a break and then go to our line. But when you begin to study the patterns, things will become clearer. When you question, things will become clearer. If you are a math teacher and you're talking about the Pythagorean theorem being a squared plus b squared equals c squared, when you begin to study the history of Egypt and you see that pyramids are there, then you know that Pythagoras, the European, could not have been the author of the Pythagorean theorem, because the Egyptians built pyramids, and in order to build a pyramid, you have to solve A and B, and then you get C, you see. So the Pythagorean theorem was put into practice in Egypt before Pythagoras. When you begin to analyze, when you study and analyze, when they show us pictures of European saints and European noblemen, and their images of white people all the time, they may not have been white, but then you look at the year that these pictures were given to us in the 1950s, and these rulers ruled in the 12 and 1300s, then you know that something is wrong. Somebody has tampered with the original and have given us parquet and made us think that it's butter. They've given us tang and made us think that it's orange juice. So these are just some of the techniques and some of the things that we can use to analyze this history and look at what has been done to us as people by studying the dates and by studying the alterations and the changes, and also studying the definitions of certain things that we've been taught. Dark Ages. Were the Dark Ages really Dark Ages because of the destruction of science and technology and engineering and mathematics, or was it the Dark Ages because Europe was being ruled by dark-skinned people? These are some of the questions that we need to ask as a people. So I'm going to end with that, Brother Marvin, and hand it back over to you, and then you can take it wherever you want to take it, my brother.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Tang, I like that, giving us tang and making us think. Beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. If you want to call and talk to Dr. Bruce or you have a question or comment, 845-277-9250. We're in the Recapturing the African Mind lecture series with Dr. Bruce. He just finished another great lecture. Again, right, this is an open forum. This is a community call, and we're asking you to join us in the conversation, in dialogue. There's so much history that we don't know. There's so much that we need to understand about our situation here and around the world, and there's some things that we can do. We know that education is so very important. Thank you, Dr. Bruce, for this wonderful lecture. We're looking forward to the question and answer, but we're also looking forward to having you back week after next. as well. All right, Brother George, bring you in first.
Yes, sir.
Now, that was heavy.
Yes, sir.
Lots of great stuff about how they captured our minds. What are your thoughts?
Well, I as Bruce was talking, you know, it just reminds me of the things that go on in this country. For example, I thought about the fact that you had all of these people like giving their interpretation of history and rewriting books and anthropologists and archaeologists doing all these different studies and acting like they were finding, you know, different artifacts and things to that effect. For example, the artifact of Nefertari, I think her name was, and she was European. And what actually happened was one of the, if Bruce knows more about this, I wish he would speak on it. One of the archaeologists threw the artifact in the dirt and then covered it up. And then they acted as though they found it right then. And a lot of times in different books, you see this version of Nefertari, and it's actually a fake, you know. But what it was an idea to support the idea that the Europeans actually did all of this extensive scientific work in North Africa and in Kemet in particular, so that they could support the version that they were rewriting the books about what happened with ancient history and scientific information. And so I really would like for Bruce to kind of comment on that, if he will.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, you're absolutely right, George. Much of the history, and it reminded me of something I'm reading now, dealing with Celtic Europe, or the Celts in Europe, and how there was a French scientist who actually pushed the whole idea of making the Celts this blonde head. And that's spelled C-E-L-T-S, too, so people might be taking notes and want to look it up a little later. But how European wants to take these Celtic people, C-E-L-T-I-C, these Celtic people and make them blonde-haired, light-skinned. I don't use that term fair, because fair denotes being good, being kind, being honest, and that's not what it was. Fair-skinned. Look it up yourselves when you get a chance. Synonym from fair, and see if that's really Europeans. Okay, if they're really fair. But anyway, they wanted to, they promoted this idea of Celtic people being fair complexion, light complexion, not fair, light complexion, tall, blonde, and then this was pushed in the academic circles. And academicians started to accept this theory, and then this is what the world is based upon today when we talk about the Celtic people. And I'm just using this example of what you said about the remnants of Nefertari that were found. Anytime Europeans get a chance to conceal or to cover the knowledge of information any way they can, they'll do it. From taking off the noses and the lips of the statues of ancient civilizations to lightening the pictures by using chemicals of the ancient civilizations, by promoting theories of different people who ruled at a certain time, then they will do that. Or even if they have to go as far as I talked about on a few weeks ago about the Schomburg collection in New York and how Arthur Schomburg had to make sure that the his collection that the New York Library bought was put in the hands of the public, but they wanted to make it a private collection. And what would that do? When you take the research and the letters and the bibliographies and the biographies and the manuscripts that are in those libraries become private, that's going to keep it from the public eye. So Europeans would do anything if it's covering up some bones in the dirt, as you said, Brother George, or if it's knocking off some noses, or if it's postulating another type of thinking in academia to make it appear that one people or another people, they will do it. Anything to keep the truth from coming forward. That's what it is. So anyway, I'm going to stop at that because I want to give our callers a chance to speak. All right. Are we there?
All right. Yes. Thank you,
yes,
Dr.
Sir.
Bruce. I appreciate that. Great detail. Great detail. You ready to go to the lines, Dr. Bruce?
Yes, sir. That's what I was wondering. Yes, sir.
All right. All right.
I'm
going to start.
Want to hear from
go
some
ahead.
New people, too. I told some people about the program. I want to see if any of you all are listening. So please call in.
Okay. 845-277-9250. If you're listening online, you can call in as well. Right? If you got a question or comment or just want to say hey, hi, hello to Dr. Bruce, you can. Of course, you can always say hi to Brother George as well. So here we go. We're going over to 8502. First on deck today, 8502. You're on live. Tell us where you're calling from and if you have a question or comment. 8502. Are you there? 8502. Go on once.
On mute.
All right, let's
hello,
go.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Candace Brown, and I am Brother Bruce's niece from Wilmington, Delaware, visiting. I got in on Thursday, and I am always happy to hear the wealth of knowledge that I get from him on any platform that he's on or when I'm with him in person. And I always use it as a challenge for me as a personal early educator for young children before they enter school to try to convert this information for our youngest people to try to understand, and I use this as a way to challenge me to be able to provide them this information at a very young age so that they have the curiosity to want to build on that, because if you plant the seed, it will grow. And I just wanted to say thank you so much to all of you for being able to provide this to people that don't know.
Okay, and I'd like to also say to Candace, spread the word back up in Delaware when you go. Give this number out to some people and tell them what time it comes on and help us push the program.
Absolutely.
Right. Thank you for your call.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Sister Candace. All right, Delaware in the house. All right, we're going over to 1688. 1688, you're on live with Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question. How you doing, Brother Bruce? This is Brother Barrett from New York.
All right, brother.
Back in the 30s and the 40s, a lot of black entertainers went over to France to live because they treated them better than they treated them over here. Like Josephine Baker, James Baldwin, that gentleman who was the first black pilot. But in Africa, the French are the most brutal of murderers. I don't understand that concept.
All right, let me speak on that. Just to make it clear too, to those who may not be familiar, because we want to keep all our students on the same page. Brother Barrett's familiar, but some students may not be. As he mentioned, many African Americans did go to France, and some of them, like he said, was Josephine Baker, James Baldwin went to France and spent several years there, and probably some writers there from the Harlem Renaissance, they went to France, and they commented about how it was better for black people than it was for black people in France, better than it was for black people in America. So Brother Barry's asking, when you look at what they were saying about blacks in France, what the black writers and celebrities in America were saying about living in France compared to what's happening to Africans in French colonies, there's a difference. Now let me tell you what happened. First of all, when we look at the French colonies, you'll find that more Africans speak the French language than French people in France. There are more Africans in Africa speaking French than French people in France speaking French. So it's widespread in Africa. But and when we study colonizers, they talk about the French process of colonialism was called assimilation, meaning they would mix directly into the populations that they would come among and would marry and would really be a part of those particular communities. Now, the British had a policy called indirect rule. They would put a governor in the colony who would answer to the king or the queen or the official over in Britain. You see, indirect rule. You see, all the European colonies had policies by which they governed their colonies. So French policy was assimilation. Now, back to your question. Now, the reason, and it's from my own analysis, that these African celebrities felt better in France is because of just that. They were African, so they were Black American celebrities. If Joe Blow from up on the street corner, who's playing three-card Molly and shooting dice, goes over into France, it's not going to be that way. It's because of the celebrity that James Baldwin had, because of the celebrity of a Josephine Baker, because of the fact that they were great entertainers, then white people have always wanted us to entertain them. They will always accept you as you're an entertainer. If you're an athlete, they will accept you if you're LeBron James. They're going to accept you if you are a singer or a dancer. But if you're just an ordinary human being, no, ain't got time for you, you see. So I think the reason is, from my analysis, is because of who they were. But what is it? We're doing something for them. We're causing them to feel good. We're entertaining them. We're making them enjoy themselves. This is why, when it comes to athletes and entertainers, even their agents and their managers, they want them to only shoot the ball, dribble the ball. Don't talk, nigga. Don't say nothing about what I'm saying about any politics. Just shoot the ball. Just dance that dance. Just sing that song. That's all I want you to do. And that's why. Give another example, then we'll go on to another call. And that is, when I was over in Africa with Marlon and Tito Jackson of the Jackson 5, in maybe 7-8 years ago, out of all the places they've been, everywhere in the world, it was their first time going to Africa. And if you look at many Black entertainers, most of them have not gone to Africa because their managers and the agents and the producers and people who are in charge of them don't want them to get into any situations where any politics are involved. Just sing, nigga. Dance, nigga. Go ahead on and shoot that ball and run it up and down the field and get me a touchdown. That's all I want you to do. Thank you very much, Brother Barry. Hope that answered your question.
Yes, sir.
All right,
thank
Brother
Mom,
we can go to another one. Our time is rolling, huh?
Okay. Thank you for your call. We're going to go over to 0148 for 148, you're live. Dr. Bruce.
Hey, good evening, everyone. My quick question is regarding the Pangaea. We know that was that supercontinent, that huge landmass, which leaves then what would be the name for the ocean, a water part of that of our globe. And secondly, where does Australia and Antarctica fit after that rupture of the continent, of that supercontinent?
All right, now, in terms of names of the water, I'm not familiar. But Antarctica and those other countries, they'll fit. If you would push Antarctica back up from the South Pole, it would sort of fit right into Africa, too. But that Pangaea basically included those continents south of the equator, which of course would include Antarctica. But they would almost fit, too. Even Australia, if you look at Australia, it will. New Zealand fits almost perfectly into Australia. From the north and drop New Zealand down to the south, it fits almost perfectly into the northern part of Australia. And some of those other continents would fit, too. You see. But in terms of water, I'm not familiar with what the waters were called.
All righty. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Thank you for your call, brother. I'm going over to 9282. 9282, you are on live with Brother George and Dr. Bruce. You have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon and peace, brothers. Hope all is well.
Hey. Peace, brother.
Yes, sir. Look, what Dr. Bruce was talking about today got me, you know, I'm trying to be as analytical as I can ever be in analyzing information and so forth. But let me first say, Dr. Bruce, you know also that one of the definitions of entertainer is a fool. You know, you look up the definition of the word fool, one of the definitions of fool is going to be an entertainer. You know, the king would say on his court, say, bring out the fools, which would be the singers
right,
and the dancers. You know,
that's
how they do it.
And the music is right.
Yeah. But I just want to add, listening to you today, you know, it got me thinking, what were our men doing at that time in Africa before the French first got there, our gods, prior to the French arriving? What were they doing? So when the French got there and came in with their games, what man, and learning over the years what really is to be a man myself, because God knows my first 30 years, I didn't know what a man was. You know, I was searching for it, finding it, and being a fool, okay? But now, at this age in my life, I think I know as a black man what a man should be doing. So what were our men doing when they got there? What man would turn his children over to a stranger in his land and
but
let
you see,
that man educate his people, educate his children again? You know, something?
Yeah, I was about to say, but what happened is, as I talked about earlier in some of our earlier lectures, we were always kind to strangers. We would allow them to come in, first of all, before they would set up the mission schools in the communities in the various countries of African countries. They would come in, first of all, and get up under the chiefs or the rulers. As a matter of fact, a good source for this is in my book. I talk about later on in the book about South Africa and Cecil Rhodes and how they would send the preachers in, not the priests,
right,
but send the preachers in to start teaching the Bible to the men and to
right,
the spiritual leaders, and to make it appear that this new religion that I'm bringing you is better than what you have. As a matter of fact, in the chapter that I just discussed, I talk about it. I just didn't get to it today, but it talked about the fact of how that we were made to look at what we were teaching. Our men were teaching, our spiritual trainers, our spiritual priests, was inferior to what Europeans had. And they got us to believe that by being cunning and nice and sweet. And so that's really what happened. And then we bought into their program. And after we learned what was going on, it was too late. It was too late. There was a lot of deception that took place in all of this, because first of all, they recognize, and not to go on too much with this, is the fact that they realized that we were a spiritual people.
Right.
We believed in right, and then since they recognize that these people here are spiritual people, then we're gonna hit them with what it is that they respect, spirituality, and they hit us with that spirituality from their perspective, that Eurocentric Christianity, and we bought into it. And that's basically it.
Okay. See, that implies to me that we didn't know God to begin with. Because if I know God and I'm standing with God, then you can't come in and make me believe your God is better than mine and change my opinion and have me start following you.
Right,
if I know God, if I know my God, I know who I am, I don't care what you come in here and start telling me about what your God doing. I don't want to hear it. See what I'm saying? And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right. We're going over to Brother Fahim on next, 7282. Brother Fahim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can
Welcome
you hear me?
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, brother. I'm here. Well, first of all, thank you, Brother George, Brother Marvin, Brother Bruce. There's no other podcast like this, because just the type of information that my brother is giving. Let me say this. I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. My brother and I have traveled throughout the country. My brother has been teaching this for a long time. What struck me about this conversation today was we first must understand this, that we were a people that lost our names, our history, our culture, our folkways, our mores, our traditions, sacraments, and rites. So like Brother Bruce was talking about, missionaries have always been used as a tool to control the political, economic, and social condition of indigenous people across the world. Imagine this, brothers, Brother Bruce, in 1517, Bishop Bartholomew Las Casas, the Spanish and the Portuguese drew a line called the Proud Bull of Demarcation, which the Catholic Church divided the entire world up between two European people. Now, if that's not the epitome of white supremacy, arrogance, then I don't know what else I could say. So religion, as Brother Bruce wrote about in Recapturing the African Mind, it speaks to the past and present devastating effect that missionaries have had. But let's be clear. Let's not just get stuck on Christian missionaries, because Islamic missionaries also came to Africa in the 8th century, raping, robbing, pillaging, no different than the Caucasians. Okay, so both Islam and Christianity both has had negative and positive impacts on black people in Africa. John Henry Clark had taught, like Brother Bruce, for many years on the effects of colonialism, and the main tool they use has always been religion. Now, my brothers, let's not mistake this, because we know the origin of true Christianity was in Africa. Surely the folks in Kush, the folks in Kemet had a form of Christianity long before Western Christianity. And so my brother, Brother Bruce, has written one of the most profound scholarly books. You know, he goes through the Berlin Conference, the fact that had how France, England, America, Britain divided Africa 1884, 1885. And to hear this knowledge, it's just inspiring. But my brother, like I said earlier, this is not a new journey for him. Now, next week, with Brother Marvin, Brother George, permission. I'm coming on the show to talk about my walk with my mentor, Brother Bridges, Dr. Bridges, who wrote the book Recapturing the African Mind. What better topic can African people be talking about other than recapturing our minds? So this topic is serious for all Afrocentric scholars, for preachers, for historians, for missionaries. Listen to my brother, because the condition that we are in right now is a direct result of the effect that the missionaries had on black people. Now, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, in 1933, wrote a book, Profound, called The Miseducation of the Negro. When you look at that thesis, Woodson talked about how the Negro is in love with everybody's culture, everybody's history, other than his own history and culture. And my brother, we traveled to the Ascot conferences. We traveled to the Melanin conferences. And he's been on this journey teaching black people the knowledge of self. And brothers, this show is profound, it's enlightening, and I thank each one that's online, call somebody else, touch somebody. Elijah Muhammad said this. He said, out of all the knowledge one can acquire, there was none better than the knowledge of self.
And what that.
My brother is teaching that reconnects us to the knowledge itself. Black folk in Kemet, black folk in Kush was doing phenomenal things. All spiritual schools of thought have to go back to Kemet. Look at Asar, Kabu, Aset. Look at the story of resurrection. Look at the story of the winter and summer solstice.
Right.
Black folk
and Brother Ma.
Were actually dealing with aspects of divine cosmology. Long before European, they were slick enough to switch the S-U-E-N and switch it to the S-O-N.
That's right, brother. Another.
And gave us a story,
brother,
about Jesus Christ. But actually,
Marvin,
that story went
back. I know, he's rolling right now. We're going to have to get him on the show next week. Brother,
you don't have, we're going to have him next week,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to have you next week. We're going to have to turn it back over to Dr. Bruce. But I appreciate it.
I just wanted to see if we had some callers, because I don't want people saying to me, well, I called, we're trying to get in, couldn't get in. So, Brother Faheem, we'll be back next week. Those who are tuned in, be sure to tune in again on next week. Be sure to tune in next week. Brother Marvin, we got him on the line. I know Dr. Rogers said he was on the internet.
Thank you, brothers.
Yeah, a lot of people are on the internet from what I'm seeing. But we're going to go over to 78. Thank you, Brother Faheem. 78, 72, you're on live with Dr. Bruce, Dr. George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment? 98, 72. Go on once.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm here.
All right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Peace to you, Dr. Marvin, Dr. George, and Dr. Bridges. What do you think about vices? Do they have prices?
I don't quite, like, what do you mean, prices?
I feel that before you accept a vice, check out the cost/benefits ratio before proceeding.
Okay. Good point. Good point. Right. Right. So you're saying that our African leadership should have looked at the prices they would have to pay for this so-called mission education that they were receiving. Is that what you mean?
Of course, that's it.
Right. And that makes sense too. You're right. I don't think they thought about it like that, but that's a good. How'd you put that call up? What'd you say? How'd you put that?
Vices have prices. Know the cost slash benefit ratio before proceeding.
Okay, right. You're coming from a business standpoint. That's a good idea. Right. Uh huh.
All right. Anything else, caller?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling and thank you for joining us today. Now, also, Dr. Bruce, this brother called last week, I think, and he asked about Little Height. Brother George, what's the name of that place down there in Durham he asked about?
Oh, Haytie.
Like Little Haytie, yeah. Yeah, can you go into that real quick before we wrap up? Because he had that question, and I think you may have the answer, so I wanted to follow up with that.
Let's do that next week. That'll take a few minutes because, hey, Ty, that's really a good discussion for a whole program one week. I'd rather do it then because I'm looking at our time, and I know you want to close it out. But, hey, Ty is very interesting, very interesting.
Okay. Well, that's it for the caller line. So we're going through everybody for today. So closing comments from you. I would like to ask one question before we go to kind of wrap this up and summarize it. So you talked about Gone Wonderland, which was really great, right? And you expounded on it. Why is this information so important to our people today?
It's important so that we can understand the place, as John Henry Clark said, the place of Africa in world history. Had it not been for Africa being where it was located, which had nothing to do with us, but due to the creation, had Africa not been where it was located, these other continents or land masses that we are part of, they would not be here. And had Africa not been as strong and as solidly stationed as it was on Earth, then these other continents would not have been able to pull away from it and it remain where it is today. So it's very, very, Gondwanaland is very important. As a matter of fact, that word Gondwanaland, which is another whole subject on Gondwanaland, comes from an Indian term, the people of the Gond, G-O-N-D. I just didn't want to go into all that today because, that's another whole lecture on that. But it's actually from the people from the country of India who were called the Gond people, G-O-N-D, because parts of India were connected with Africa. So it was due to the stability of the solid foundation that Africa held on the world stage that we actually have the whole entire planet Earth that we have today. Africa was powerful, that's why it's been put down so much. So a lot of our people today were listening on the internet, huh?
Yeah. So we got through all the callers. And again, thank you, Dr. Bruce. And any final comments from you before we wrap up for today?
Final comment, be sure to tune in next week to Brother Fahim, who'll be your guest next week. And always remember that today and next week, whether I'm on or not as a guest, we must always try to recapture the African mind, because until we get our minds back, then we won't have any proper activities, because thought precedes action.
All right. And you'll be coming back with Chapter 3, is that right?
That's right.
All right. So we got something to look forward to. Again, let's thank Dr. Bruce for joining us with us, a powerful lecture on recapturing the African mind. We look forward to him. And also, what Brother Fahim said about you was so powerful. So he's going to recognize you on next week as a part of his facilitation. So, Brother George, final comments from you. Great show, Dr. Bruce. We appreciate you. We look forward to you on week after next.
Yes, sir. I really, you know, I was impressed with Brother Fahim's introduction to who he is, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say next week as a continuation and talking in reference to his relationship with Dr. Bridges, which I know is a strong one because that's how I met Fahim. I met Fahim from when Dr. Bridges had the bookstore, and it was close to the center of the city at that time. It wasn't over on the location that that he eventually moved to that was close to North Carolina Central. And, you know, that is where I met Brother Fahim. And, you know, I've always been impressed with Fahim, and you know that I've always been impressed with Dr. Bridges since I listened to his tape called What They Never Taught You in History Class. And when he made that little tape that cost me $5 was like $1 million worth of information, really $1 billion worth of information in that one little cassette tape. Now, you know, that's going back years when I say I was listening to him on a cassette tape. Not a DVD, not a CD, a cassette tape. And I actually have a library of cassette tapes from back in the day, a library of cassette tapes, a library of VHSs, a library of DVDs. And many of them are from Dr. Bridges or from someone that he introduced me to. So I'd like to, you know, turn things back over to you, brother, so you can close things out.
Well, thank you, Brother George, for your commitment to the cause. I know you've been in it for a long time. Dr. Bruce, you've been in it. And Dr. Bruce is now, in my mind, at the level, right, as the next generation moves up, where he's our Dr. Ben, he's our Diop, he's our Asa Hilliard. He is now our major scholar. And so we got one in the midst of us right now that's still living, that's alive and sharing his knowledge, right, live and in color. And so let's take advantage of the opportunity to recapture the African mind by doing the work on ourselves. We have to make a complete commitment to change, not just to get in and fit in no more, or not halfway going in, but really looking at changing ourselves. The first change is a change with yourself and your own mind, right? Your belief system and the things that you think that are true, that's been given to you as a tool for control. The next thing is you have to make a commitment to loving yourself and your people. We need help right now. We really do. In a series of shows like this and the other ones that we're networked with, that's trying to give our people everything that they need to heal, to recover and resurrect ourselves so that we can become the great people that we've been born to be, original kings and queens on this earth. Let's continue to do the work of manufacturing positive activities, peaceful communities, that we're builders again, that we're constructing and reconstructing ourselves as we go along. And it's brothers like Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and Brother Fahim, and Dr. Rogers, and so many others that have made a commitment, committed their lives to changing our people's minds and our hearts through education. So it's so important that we educate ourselves. It's so important that we love ourselves, that this work that we're doing is not an impossible dream, but it's a reality and a prophecy that we can bring true if we continue to do the work. So I'm asking you, tell a friend, call next week, listen to the show, make a commitment to working on yourself. Do something positive today. Say something good. Get a book. Find an author. And then get to work, working on yourself. It's empowerment for African Americans, 365 days of the year. Black History Month, 365 days of the year. Kwanzaa, 365 days of the year. And you continue to do the work to become the best that you can be. I'm Marvin Rohn. That's it for this week. Come back next week and enjoy us.
as we continue our lecture series on recapturing African mind. Peace and blessing, brothers and sisters. Love you so much. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.